previously on the Low Post.
And their, I thought, third best player this year in Milwaukee, but it's neck and neck with Jrue Holiday, injured. And it just kind of felt like, here come the Bucks, tanked into this matchup, ready to defend their title, been waiting all year for the Avalanche to come, for the next gear to come. Like, I was dead wrong about the Bulls. They have really fought hard in the series. That said, the Bucks have been disgusting. Disgusting. To the point that I said this yesterday on TV. I'm like, is something wrong with the Bucks? I chalked up the first game where they had a gazillion turnovers. By the way, they had a gazillion more in game two. They have a turnover rate through two games that would have been the worst in the NBA. I chalked it up to like game one. I chalked up to, they just don't respect the Bulls. We've seen game one Bud, game one Bucks before, and they got the win. And I would have bet a lot of money that game two was like Bucks by 25. All right. We had our little hiccup. We escaped. We got lucky. Let's lay the smack down. And that's not what happened. The Bulls laid the smack down until the end when it got close. And just the turnovers are completely baffling. Passes to nowhere. Literally nowhere. Like, guys aren't where the ball is. Passes to the Bulls, who are not the Bucks. And just so much unfocused offense. Like, multiple possessions where Giannis has Nick Vucevic on him, and Chris Middleton's like, cool, I'm going to take Alex Caruso, the best defender on the Chicago Bulls. I'm going to go one-on-one against him instead of passing to you. They're just wasting possessions in a way that actually reminded me of the way they overlooked favorable matchups and took puzzling shots through the midway point of the Nets series. And of course, they crawled out of that, discovered something about themselves, and went on to win the title. And we all thought, well, that will carry over to this season. And in these playoffs, they've just looked bad. They have an offensive rating of 99 through two games. But the turnovers and the shot selection, bad spacing on defense where two guys help on the same guy, failing to talk out switches. They just suddenly look slow and unathletic, which for a team with Giannis on it is kind of remarkable. And thin, too. And just, I'm expecting them to come out tonight in game three and throw the punch that I thought would happen in game two, even without Middleton, who, by the way, looked awful until he made a few jump shots toward the end before the calf thing. But they better, because these first two performances have been very dispiriting.
Previously on ESPN Chicago 1000's Waddle and Sylvie.
Raul at Logan Square.
Just don't say anything negative about the Bears.
What's up, Raul?
What's going on, guys? I'm being optimistic. You know, ever since the Bulls been in the playoffs and the Taj dip, Gibson, putback slam dunk, you know, we've been just having bad luck in the playoffs ever since that game that we won against, I think it was Miami Heat. And I feel more optimistic knowing that we're going to play without Middleton, you know, against them, and Giannis. You know, I don't feel as bad as I did when we used to have to face LeBron with the Cavaliers of the Heat. I'm super optimistic, you know, I can't wait. I'm going to get drunk. It's Friday night. Go to my boy's house.
What are you drinking, bro? What are you drinking?
Whoa. A-ball. We're going to drink some Presidente. We're going to drink some cognac.
All right. It's going to get dangerous.
Be safe.
We're going to get like El Chapo tonight.
Oh, no. That's nothing. You don't want to hear that.
We're going to feel like El Chapo in his 18.
So what that
means. It's going to be party, man. It's going to party. They're going to come out with a W.
See you, Raul.
Have a good one, guys.
Did he say he was going to do a whole 8-ball? Is that what he said?
Yeah, I think so.
Miller, what did he say?
I think he's definitely insinuated that. I do like, though, the callback to the Taj Gibson dunk back in 2011, game one against the Heat.
They blew him out.
Sunday night's Eastern Conference Finals.
I was there, too.
That was such a good game.
Game one. I mean,
he said he was doing an 8-ball tonight. Don't do an 8-ball tonight.
Previously this evening on the Girl Step podcast.
Let's have the Chris Middleton combo. That's what I was referencing before. You know, I don't think Chris Middleton makes the team worse, despite the fact that they've been way better since he got hurt. Obviously, I think losing that game was kind of a wake-up call, and they've just played a lot differently. I will say, I think there was something to what Adam said on the last pod about how Bobby, even though he's not a terrific defender, like just bringing more energy, more lateral movement on defense has helped the Bucks a little bit. And I do think, like, when Chris does return, I think defensively, you're just going to need Chris to do more, which is going to be tough considering he's not going to be probably fully mobile. Offensively, I almost wonder if this is a little bit of evidence, and I don't think you should take two wins over the Bulls to mean too much of anything, but is it a little bit of evidence that we should take the ball out of Chris's hands a little bit more and get Chris off the ball? Still taking shots, a lot of shots, but do we have the ball in Chris's hands too much?
See, the problem with that is the way that Chris gets into a rhythm is by having the ball in his hands and, like, going at his own pace.
Yeah.
Is that the uncomfortable Chris Middleton conversation?
I think just the fact that they've looked so much better now.
I don't see, yeah, they have looked better, but it's not like, it's a correlation, it's not a causation thing.
Not all of it. No, not all of it is. I do think his defense has been really bad.
It has.
Eight guys play tonight. Bobby, Giannis, Brooke, West, Drew, Javon, Grayson, Pat. Is Chris worse than all of them defensively?
Previously on Tatonia World Presents.
So yeah, we're going to miss Chris Middleton. Like, if you need to hear me say, we are going to miss Chris Middleton, because I think even like the 2018-2019 version of him, he'd give you one good game. I'm just going to say Bucks in six. I'm going to predict optimism. It's not like I'm predicting optimism because Chris is gone. I really wish this lazy dude didn't get hurt. Like, I really wish this dude didn't get hurt. We were going to need him. Bright side, though. The bright side take of, because Chris is ultimately a ball stopper, right? Chris was in jail. Chris couldn't do anything. And so then he's just another NBA player who's going to make a shot or not make a shot. And I'm not saying, let me be clear, I'm not saying we're better off without him, but quarter to quarter, a lot of times it's better if he's not out there stopping the ball. And I think what we saw in the games where it was Drew and Giannis, or just Drew, is that the ball is going to move around the perimeter, and now we have guys who can actually attack closeouts in Connaughton and Grayson. Now we can have the ball move around and have athletes attack the closeouts and kick out. Like, once the ball gets to Chris, he has the thing. And if he needs to get in a point, that's going to, in the post, it's going to take 9 seconds. And he's a abysmal defender, and he's a bad rebounder, and you know all that, right? So, and his assists at this point are just coming with turnovers. So now Portis has to get another game. Portis or Brook now has to. We need a Portis game just to beat the Bulls.
So the Bucks lose to the Grizzlies. It was really bad. The loss to the Grizzlies is not that big of a deal, ultimately. It's not, I hate the term outlier, the word, I guess, outlier. Just the definition of outlier. Bad game. Real briefly, 5-minute episode. Let's do actual 5 minutes, although, yeah, I put 7 minutes of filler there. But, like, I was looking at it. Obviously, I wanted to remake some of the points from those montages. Look, I'm deep into basketball. It's beautiful. Basketball is beautiful. I'm sure you'll think, just another pretty good video from that guy. But I hope it's personal and interesting. But it's taking a little bit longer. I know I said it was going to come out on the 15th. Still playing around with it. That, you know, I will sell no wine before it's time. But that's why the footage, the clips, rather, is at the beginning of this. I hate. Look, to me, real quick, the only real sensible way to talk about any of this stuff is to talk about the Twitter conversation. I hate, like, the Twitter conversation is really interesting, but because it's the Twitter conversation is so political, it's weird talking. Like, I'm not going to talk about the politics of it, even just to reference it, but the Twitter situation, the ongoing Elon situation, I don't know why people like him. I don't know why people hate him. I think it's kind of interesting having Lex Luthor in my life. But again, these are just people. What's interesting is the concept, right? So I want to talk about, here's the problem when I talk. I am... No one has ever checked me on this. By the way, excellent Music of James Bond episode, probably coming out one of these off days, one of these holiday off days. That's going to be a lot of audio clips. And that's going to take a minute. But look for that one with Adam's on there, Riley's on there, Kyle's on there. Like just a great little fun kind of quick hour. Really, really great. It's a great show. And with the clips, that'll be maybe a nice hour 15. I just don't know how to talk about any of this kind of stuff.
without talking about the Twitter thing. And this kind of came to a head with the Draymond situation. But I am, here's what I'm saying. I talk about nerds a lot. And every time I talk about nerds, it feels like racist almost. It feels like you know, like, yeah, but this guy, he's one of the good ones, you know. Most of these people are nice. Most of these people are nice to me. And if you, again, I'm not, if you listen to this and you think I'm talking about you, I'm not talking about you. And I also have to be sensitive. I'm sensitive when I talk about these things too, because, well, here's the problem. The problem with the internet associated to Twitter, associated to Bucks basketball, and we're talking about ultimately meaningless things, right? Is the sort of early adopters of this space, and many of them put many, many hours into this. I'm not criticizing them as basketball fans or anything like that. But like the Middleton thing in relation to all this, the Middleton and Giannis thing, is this year 11 for those dudes? It's like 10 or 11. So there's all these people who haven't watched the Bucks without Middleton and Giannis. And like, I get that, right? And also we get, like, that's cool. I actually like that. I think some episodes back I talked about the Meow Meow Beans episode of Community, which was kind of sort of prophetic kind of episode that it's hard to summarize, but essentially it was like the college gets basically a Twitter kind of program, like a pilot, like a beta test kind of thing, and it collapses into, you know, the fall of the French Revolution. It's like by the end of it. But like the thing before this was like kind of known, the thing about the episode is not that people were bullies or any of kind of stuff. The thing was that people got elevation by being nice and being fake nice and being like politicians and not being themselves, or having an infirmity or having like a bit. And it was very, it was the French Revolution essentially. And again, whatever, right? There's a lot of people who make really great content. I'm always, so whenever we talk about this, I'm sensitive and I always want people to know that I'm not bagging on anybody, even though I talk about Ty Windish a lot, and like I'm gonna talk about probably this episode too, like, but especially all those guys, Adam and Jordan are great. And Adam, for example, is an example of this awesome kind of thoughtful, and those guys branched out into the Packers now and the Brewers and all this kind of stuff. But the reason that the internet took this hold with the Bucks community is because people didn't care about the Bucks like that, right? And so there was a space for those guys to come in and do a great job. And of course there was Frank Madden and Steve Von Horn and later Name and Kane and all these guys, right? And because it's the internet and people are so envious, like all of those guys went through, like some people, again, I don't know why people think I'm going to talk about this, but people are always like, in DMs, like, don't you hate blank? Don't you hate Kane? I can't stand Eric. Don't you like this? I like this guy. I don't like this guy. But again, this, it's the Meow Meow Beans, right? This isn't things that are said. And it's not polite. Like, I don't feel polite saying it either. But this crested with, like, the Draymond situation. So you got kind of like the gatekeepers of Twitter, right? So name is on Zach Lowe. And I think once people reach a certain point, like I've always been happy for him, but like people are happy for him. Once you're at a certain level, like people have always been happy for like Frank Madden and people who are perceived as being there the whole time. And obviously some people are like more likable than other people or produce better content or whatever, right? But there's kind of a thing, and this was noticeable because there's like Bucks Twitter, and then there's kind of like Black Bucks Twitter also, and there's been a dynamic for a couple of years where, like, we saw this with Bucks film room, we see with this with Bucks film room a lot, where people like basically like they don't love you like Kobe, right? So like, he wanted to be the guy early in the year that like poured the water out on Beauchamp, and people were like, no, you don't get to do that. And it's just like this weird thing. Like, I wish you know, people should be nice or whatever, but there is this kind of thing of who gets to say what, right? And of course, this all crested this week with, you know, Tywin just being very credulous and telling the city of Milwaukee to do better in response to a Draymond story that never passed the smell test. Now, maybe this story will have more layers to it, but again, it's like this, it's like this push, like, and there's certain guys like that, or Bruce City Paul, these other people who are like, well, I feel like I should say this, and they put out a press release saying, you know, like, you know, someone yelled terrible epithets to an NBA player, you know, like Trump tweets, like, sad, you know, sad. And it's weird because, like, people act like politicians. And, again, whatever. Nice guys. Whatever, right? But it rubs people the wrong way if you're not, like, Frank Madden. And the thing that then comes out with some of these conversations as it goes is because when people like weren't really into the Bucks before, then it's just kind of like, well, yo, you know, you merely adopted the dark. Like, I was born in the dark, right? Like, I was molded by this Bucks fandom, like everybody was. And so the reason this matters is because the Meow Meow Beans are like super positive until there's a revolution, that people don't talk honestly, and it becomes this emotional form of discourse. I love Chris. He's worked so hard. I love this. Well, what about Brooke? And I always kind of wonder why this didn't apply to Drew, but I don't want to have another, like, Middleton was awful, and that's not why I'm recording. The point is, I would say, and I'm not the smartest guy in any of these discourses by any means, but, like, smart discourse is stopped when people are scared to say stuff because Snell season might not like them or whoever, right? And that's also why I knew Twitter was never going to go away, because, like, without Twitter, who's going to listen to Nathan Marzion or whoever, right? I mean, no shade, but, like, if you were at a bar stool and some guy was just like, if you're like, man, I, you know, the Bucks did good when they hedged on this, but I really have, you know, concerns about Brooke doing that, but, man, that shot looks good, blah, blah, blah. And if you were, like, at a bar stool and the guy next to you was like, Chris Middleton is good, with, like, you know, beer drooling drip down his chin or whatever, you'd be like, all right, cool, man. Like, not interesting to me. Just kind of random platitudes, but whatever, right? So these people who have status for whatever reason, because they play this weird political game, like, I thought the whole point of this was not to play a political game, to just be dudes and be sports fans and kind of have a take and see where it goes and adjust your take and talk about, like guys talking about sports. Well, that's not what this is. This is a Meow Meow Beans kind of game. And the reason, I think, again, people are smart. People are smarter than me. People have these great ideas. But the thing is, we always forget the stuff. Chris is just the highest example of this, but people have forgiven Bud. Like, people have forgiven all these people. People don't even remember the stuff that takes place because the whole thing gets memory hold with the fake positivity, right? And so I had to, like, kind of back and forth with, I think that was Eric J. Smirner, this evening, and people say stuff like, this is a three-time All-Star, this or that, or we do, like, for, like, how was Chris Middleton 26 on that ringer list? Like, how does that happen? It's just the spin that we all agree. It's like the processed food that we all agree to consume, right? Like, it should be understood. Like, this would be very understood and established, but every bad game that ever took place, again, people look at the numbers, and it's kind of always my objection to looking at the numbers, because if you look at the overall, like, dude, like, the shadiest, like, I like Bucks film room. People doing, like, the, hey, so far Chris has only 7 turnovers and 26 assists, and it's like, we have a 10-year sample, and the 2-year sample of Drew Holiday is enough. Our sample of Brooke is good enough. Our sample of Bud is certainly enough. All this kind of stuff where people are like, ooh, a great stretch, even though, you know, what happened in the games happened in the games. And so people try to sneak stuff in, and I guess it's fine. But here's my general concern, right? if you're not just saying stuff for likes and retweets, then you have to look at this and say, well, when do NBA players fall off a cliff? And look, this is, I don't even want to have the Chris conversation, because the Chris conversation will be is evergreen, and you can look at every third episode. He's 31 years old. He's not, like, no one would say, if the burden of proof isn't on me, if the burden of proof is on the defense, no one would say that he's a good athlete. No one would say he try hard. Like, if you had to be like 50-50 on one side or the other, would you say that he has a great work ethic? The answer is no. Would you say that he's good at defense anymore? No. Would you say that he's good at taking care of the ball? No. So I don't know how he ended up 26 on that list ahead of Drew. Drew was ahead of him on some other lists, and it's just lists. Lists do not matter. But again, the perception of him gets to be evergreen because we memory hold the whole finals. I mean, look, I did what I could to make a finals video, but like, there's not a NBA films type thing. People just memory hold the net series and everything else. And we got to say, if only Chris Middleton had been there, we'd have beat the Celtics, because after all, we took them to seven. And I'll say this again, Gilbert Arenas fell off a cliff, Joe Johnson fell off a cliff, Mitch Richmond fell off a cliff, Ray Allen went to a different stage in his career. Name a guy, Jalen Rose, name a guy. It's a lie, guys. It's untrue to be like a player has an old man game. Hey, forget him, Drew, anybody. Gary Payton, remember Gary Payton? Incredible player. Came to the Bucks and we got like the last gasps of Gary Payton, and then he was a backup for the Heat or wherever he went after that, but it was like over, right? It was over. Athleticism still matters, even if you don't commonly use it. So it is what it is. And the other thing, let's stop talking about Chris. I don't think I've heard anyone say the rules are changing. It's a really big deal how the implementing of travel calls and not getting the rip move, not giving the cheap. Like, if Chris Middleton can't fall down on a three-pointer, we're in trouble. And there's no number that says that, I don't think, but common sense says that, right? Every little bit of this matters, because the game is called tighter in the postseason, right? These are conversations that it would be good to be had before it's too late. Now, again, this is just dudes talking. So, whatever, again. But I feel like the conversation is kind of important, but we can't have a conversation because there's like what am I? Like, I'm third tier of this stupid hierarchy, right? Frank Madden's at the top. And, you know, in a good game, we can say whatever else, but like, I think individuals got too caught up in, you know, yelling at Lakers fans or just kind of playing this troll game. These are the questions that are in front of us. And I'm frankly, I'm going to be really mad. Like, we actually owe it to Giannis. I think Giannis, we've talked about Dwight Howard. We talked about Dwight Howard a lot in 2020, 2021. He's not a smart player, guys. We don't deserve him. And he's a wonderful player. He's not a smart player. He doesn't have moves. He's most of what Harden said. The officiating for him really, really matters, because not only is the three-point shot not there, the mid-range shot is not there. His brain isn't in it. He's Earl Campbell. He's Bo Jackson. It is what it is. It's better than we ever thought we got. But if you don't think that he's going to fall right back behind KG, behind Dirk, you know, around Durant or around whatever, below Karl Malone, you guys aren't paying attention to what's happening to LeBron. Like, ultimately, everything matters. For those of you who aren't aware of this, there's not an air ball pass historically in NBA history. Like, the air ball will be in the first paragraph of, I don't want to say in his eulogy, but like, his air ball shooting will be the thing. Like, it took a long time for people to start saying, because LeBron's on the way out, and, you know, a lot of this is hater discourse for haters. You're not a hater. Like, Shaq wasn't out here airballing stuff. Like, I really hate it. Like, I don't care what he shoots free throws wise. I think, is he better than Duncan and Shaq career free throws? Like, nobody even thinks of Tim Duncan as a bad free throw shooter. Nobody can remember a big free throw that he missed. and he wasn't airballing stuff. Like, it's a bad look. It's a really bad look historically for him, because they'll be able to say that. Just like now all of a sudden people are realizing LeBron really doesn't have that many moves, and yeah, he's a gifted passer, but he's not like that fluid. All that stuff eventually comes out, right? And it comes out because of haters, but the stuff does come out. The airballs are hurting my heart in real time. Every time he shoots an airball, it diminishes his legacy in a real way. And if you don't understand this now, like, understand it later. But it's a thing. He'll always have the miracle season. A lot of players in sports have the one miracle season. These dudes need to learn how to win. Now, there's a possibility, of course, that they don't need to learn how to win, that it'll just be Pat Connaughton's hot. Or whatever. Right? But I think we can agree there was a lot of whatever in that title. But you can't say this stuff, and we should all just get off Twitter. But it warps, like at this point, I just think it's fair to say that it warps your mind watching a bunch of fake positive people like run PR for the Bucks. Or put out, you know, press statements chastising some fan. It is funny that, like, the two most actually famous fans, along with that, it's like that guy Freeway or whatever, is like whatever the name the dude is who told Giannis to shake it off, and whatever this guy is. That's an ongoing story. I just imagine that nobody else is like actually going to talk about this. And this is why we can't have big boy conversations, right? At this point, bad loss, right? Oh, and by the way, as it relates to Drew, everybody remembers that period last year, whenever it was, when Drew was winning all the games at the end and we were getting like 4 for 8 from three-pointer Drew, 27, 11 assists Drew. And somebody was like, isn't it great how he's so much better than Chris, or he's something? It's like, no, he's not. I mean, defense certainly matters. He's only a little bit better than Chris, and that's the way you have to understand this roller coaster. We have 3 solo artists. We have 3 lead guitarists. And it just kind of is what it is. I do think some of the real GM chatter that came out of tonight is simply like, boy, we look old. We don't want Crowder. We don't need another 32-year-old or however old Crowder is. And I think that makes some sense. But that's probably enough, right? That's probably enough. I want this to be positive. Like, so if we reflect on the season, we had that incredible Lakers game that was a loss, and there were the net. It's like the good Chris game, some kind of way. But there's been a lot of bad losses. On the one hand, you can say that there wasn't a single game that we had to lose. We didn't have to lose to the Bulls or the Spurs. Did we lose the Spurs, or was that just a close game? We certainly lost to the Rockets. We certainly didn't have to do that in the purple, no less. I'm just really never going to get over my feeling that we demand that people play hard on defense. Loose on offense, play hard on defense. And every night's not going to work out, but get after it. Because when it doesn't work in the playoffs, because we didn't learn how to get after it, yeah, there'll probably be some excuse. Or just we left such and such open and he drilled 9 threes or whatever. But at this point, you know, we need a plan B. And, you know, unless I don't see the Lillard possibility is actually a thing that's ever going to happen. But that's really what we owe Giannis, is to put him with another great player. Who are the great players Giannis has played with? I'll hang up and listen to your answer. He hasn't played with any great players. PBBB flagship at Clay Sun Union asks, how do you trust Chris Middleton when he costs them one title and is on his way to costing them another? Chris Middleton cost us 2 titles, right? At least. I don't think the bubble really counts, but again, if Anthony Davis and Jamal Murray and everybody else could have went red hot, it was such a shooter's gym, right? Not for us, though. He certainly cost us 2019 against the Raptors. I don't know what he cost us or didn't cost us. He's never been that good. Like, that's just actually just actually kind of the answer here. So I'm going to play, a couple clips here, and then I'm going to get up out of here. Maybe I'll say something right at the end. A couple of really good clips. Just to kind of have them. The first one is just a quick Bomani clip about, just a quick little bit of uniforms that I thought was, right in line with my thoughts. I'm going to play it. And the other one goes back way, way back to the Heat series, the Bubble Heat series. The Ethan Strauss talking about why Giannis doesn't have any good commercials. And maybe I'll say something in. If not, basketball is beautiful. Coming soon.
They did, but the other part is, it's all a big old AAU tournament. And I know that people use like AAU as shade in a lot of ways, and that's not really the way I'm going with it right now. But I do believe this. And this is a small example of it, but I think you'll feel me. I hate the random uniform game. And I don't mean the random uniform game in the NBA in the sense that they all got 8 different uniforms. I'm okay with that. But the home team's supposed to wear white or gold if you're the Lakers, and the other team's supposed to wear a color. I used to get so frustrated when I was younger. My mama would ask, who's at home in the game? The team wearing white. Now I have to entertain this question because it's perfectly reasonable. You can't tell. It looked like an AAU tournament. Just wear whatever color y'all want. Just get out here and wear whatever. Just don't wear the same color. Wear whatever tournament. You feel what I'm saying? Like, it looks like an AAU tournament out there. And the thing about the AAU tournament element of all of this is the issue with AAU for me, if there's an issue, is that nobody's playing for anything larger. Like, they're not playing for pride. They're not playing for the team. They might be playing for a different team later in the afternoon or whatever it is. It's just pick. You got 5? Okay, cool. We'll get out here and we'll run 5. But part of what makes this compelling is people playing for cities, people playing for teams, people playing for each other, whatever it is. It's not simply the sport itself. There typically needs to be some level on which it feels like they're playing for something larger. And I do think where the NBA is messed up is people don't feel like that. It doesn't look like that. Like, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't look like a professional sport anymore. Coaches ain't even got to wear no suits. You know what I'm saying? Cats out here wearing any old color shoes or whatever it is. Like, the NFL has it right, whether people would admit it or not, with uniformity. Like, there's something to that. It does add a gravity to what it is that you're doing. The NBA, I think where they messed up is that stuff, right? You should have them out there in the crisp whites if you at home. You should have them out there in the dark jerseys. Everybody should be wearing the same color shoes or whatever it is. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter, but it does. And that's where I think the league has kind of sort of slipped, because we're not growing up with teams, right? It doesn't build up. You don't get these relationships that start and go because everybody sticks around and everything else. Like, everything feels transient, I think, is maybe the best way to put it. But jump in, man. It's good things that are going on here, even though so much in the presentation make it seem like it doesn't matter. Promise you, this year, it does.
Is that everyone in the NBA talks as though streaming is really important and impressions are really important, and the conversation online is an indicator of the league's overall health. And I look at where we are right now, and number one, as a Giannis fan, I want more over-the-air Giannis commercials. I think you could package who he is and what he represents. Oh.
That clip of him talking about how he can't, I can't have everything. I can't have everything.
It's so awesome. Exactly. It's like right there. It's sitting for you on Instagram. Just figure it out.
Zero step. All you have to do is slap a Nike logo on him about why he can't shoot because God gave him everything and he can't
exactly.
have everything.
I mean he should be one of the biggest stars on the planet. And I just feel like the NBA doesn't have the right approach to building stars anymore, and marketing stars more accurately. Like, they look at Ja Morant and they're like, oh my gosh, he goes viral every time he dunks. We should make him the centerpiece of our Christmas Day action. And then we're not going to produce any commercials about Giannis Antetokounmpo, like probably the best story in all of sports. And we're just going to let him promote himself on Instagram. Like, it just feels like they're passing the buck in a way that deserves more scrutiny.
Oh,
ooh, not completely unintentional. I right assure everyone.
It's pretty good. I mean, there's a, okay. So many things are happening there. I don't think you would have to be a conspiracy theorist to believe that LeBron James has such an outsized influence at Nike that it's to the detriment of creating rival mm-hmm. stars. And somebody like a Giannis is more of a rival to LeBron than somebody more in the Allen Iverson mold of a Ja Morant. So I think that's definitely a factor. I think a lot of that has to do with how Lynn Merritt sort of, there was a little bit of symbiosis in how Lynn Merritt, sneaker executive at Nike, ascended as LeBron ascended. He was the guy who signed LeBron and really recruited him and won that bidding war. And then he had a lot of political capital for being LeBron's guy. And so he just grew and grew and grew in stature in that company. And LeBron, obviously, at least basketball wise, totally validated the early hype of his career. And so I think that informs how they've marketed guys and how they've gone about things. And I think that does have something to do with ignoring and dismissing Giannis. Maybe not explicitly. Maybe it wasn't a conspiracy where LeBron's in Portland and he's just demanding that Giannis be buried. But it is weird that he won the championship and there was no real ad campaign mm-hmm. in the aftermath of that. That was suspicious.
And again,
I would say.
Very all you had to do was odd. Just look at his press conference and clip any one of his 30-second answers to questions. All of it was so good. It just made their job so easy. Yeah. And
so good, but an indictment of LeBron. And that's what made it so good, is it was an indictment accurate. Of LeBron. He's in the press conference talking about how he did things the hard way and he didn't just sign with another team. Ooh, well, if one guy is the face of Nike and the face of Nike basketball, is he really going? But and he's, by the way, famously not insecure at all. is he going to really sign off on that kind of messaging? I don't know. And then you combine it with how Americans like to watch them some Americans. It's not Giannis's fault, but that he's not from this country is a barrier. Now, I think you still have to work with what you have if you've got an incredibly charismatic NBA champion who's the best player in the league. You've got to market that guy in the way that you're talking about.
And the people who are from this country are also annoying. You've got LeBron and Mopey, Kevin Durant. I mean, the competition isn't really that daunting, I'd say, as far as most likable athlete is concerned. I don't have a problem with LeBron, but the idea that he's going to move the needle and make people passionate about the NBA seems like it should have, it seems like the league could have moved past that in the last several seasons.
Yeah, that assumption died when playing for the sport's biggest brand, albeit in the bubble, the NBA Finals averaged 7 million viewers with LeBron James. I mean, that right there, that was a shocking result that gave them vertigo. I can tell you they really care about it in the league office, and they were freaked out by what happened right there and surprised by it. I was surprised by it. I would have thought that LeBron, Lakers, even in the crazy bubble circumstance, you would do better than one third of a decent NBA Finals. And I do think people are just kind of tired of him and the situation and the general, just how he handles things. This weird resentment that you could almost understand given the aforementioned decision saga and how he was treated. But it almost seems as though that experience scarred him to a point where he's just not a likable guy. He's not an enjoyable presence.
Apart from LeBron, I mean, when you look at where the league is, it actually sort of dovetails with what we were talking about with Twitter earlier and the way the media handles some of its messaging, where you can't trust the audience to come to the right conclusions or the conclusions you want them to just by giving them the facts. I wonder, the league just doesn't seem to trust the idea that if they invest in the over-the-air product, and really put time and energy into what a TV broadcast looks like, including commercials, including just like marketing to my parents or marketing to me. Like, I don't think that they understand or believe that that can work. And so instead they shift all this energy into these ephemeral moments moments online. It's like, is that really, we now have a lot of evidence that that strategy hasn't actually led to meaningful growth and has in fact coincided with the audience really kind of constricting here.
Yeah, they don't, you need to make it feel like a big deal. You need to build a sense of grandeur. It doesn't take a lot, as my dog barks in the background for reasons unknown to me. It doesn't take a lot to do one of those monologues that Bob Costas and Marv Albert used to do to just explain to the viewer why they should be interested. But this goes to the other thing, and we've been on these themes before, but ESPN is a very cheap, they just cheapen what they touch for whatever reason. I don't know what it is about them, but they don't have an ability to trust the audience on a lot of their
And it feels like they're playing to the wrong audience sometimes. Like, if you're playing to Twitter, you're going to be invested in myth busting and looking at numbers that tell you what's really happening and why the hype isn't warranted or whatever. And if you're trying to market to like families, you're going to be saying, all right, let me tell you about Giannis Antetokounmpo. He grew up selling purses on the streets of Greece, and now he's here.
Oh, I can picture the Bob Costas monologue.
I want it. Bob Costas is still alive.
Where the music sort of shifts. I love what they do where they're talking about this one team, and you know, here they are, and then there'd be this piano music as they shift from that story to the other guy they're about to face, because only one is going to be left standing. And Giannis knows something about adversity. He grew up on the streets of da, 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 and you would just shift with it, but they don't think we have the attention span for it. Even if and maybe we don't,
maybe we don't.
We're doing like nearly a two-hour podcast here. I don't know if other people have the attention span for it, but yes, the results have been the results, and the product has not been as inspirational to people. And it comes back to those ethereal, just you can't even quantify what it is, but you know when it's not there. And it's just been like that. It's been a product that doesn't seem to value itself and is throwing a lot of bells and whistles at you to just keep looking at it, as opposed to conveying something of intrinsic value. And that's been the story, frankly, I think, of the Adam Silver.
Yeah. Rant. Well, and I hope that somewhere along the way there is incentive to improve on those fronts. January 6th incident, LeBron and Maverick Carter storming the gates.
Storming the Portland offices of Nike. You will not give Giannis a commercial. You
Who
stop
can
that
forget?
Right now.
Yeah.
He's cast this shadow over Nike, over the NBA, and he's been great for so long that you can't really nudge him off the stage. And it does seem as though they almost need to find a way to rebuild without his enormous influence.
I get just sort of antsy talking about LeBron and criticizing LeBron because of how crazy the conversation around LeBron has been for like at least 10 years. Instinctively, I start highlighting some of what he's done really well. And we haven't heard much mainstream criticism of LeBron for the last 5 to 7 years. And there's been a lot of like, oh my gosh, LeBron is everything we want in a face of the league. And I can't help but sit here and be like, is he really? Like, what are we really getting out of this bargain at this point? If he were still in Cleveland, I do think a lot of the story would be different. I would get emotional watching him on certainly this Cavs team, but even a Cavs team with like Paul George or somebody. Like, I would enjoy watching LeBron battle it out in his twilight, whereas now all of it just feels like a formality and it's a bit tiresome. And it's probably going to continue for the next 2 or 3 years anyways.
Well, and unfortunately, I think the resentment he's feeling is palpable, because he thought and is mystified by why he's not a bigger deal at this point. And figured it would work out. He's in a similar situation to Kevin Durant, I guess, where it's, I don't understand what's not working here. You know, I've made the moves to put myself in a position to become even more revered, and it's gone the other way. And obviously nobody around him is saying that it's a you problem and you're really annoying and people don't like hearing from you. Nobody is saying that. So now he just talks more, and it just seems like, as opposed to gratitude, he's conveying something else, and nobody criticizes it. Nobody criticizes. He wins the bubble championship, and the first thing he says, he looks at the camera, he goes, I want my respect.
Yeah, all right.
Wow, that's inspiring. That's okay. It's not exactly when Giannis won. When Giannis won, it seemed like
I cried when Giannis won. I did not cry when LeBron said, I want my respect too. no offense, LeBron. It's pretty funny, man. I mean, you just look at the conversation around LeBron. I think he's making the same mistake that the NBA makes. He wants to go viral on Twitter, and he's not really playing to, like, people at home.
He was underneath the free throw line. I told my friend Brandon Fan, I said, man, I'm about to say something. So he underneath the free throw line. I got his attention. I said, Draymond. I said, we giving you a pass. He said, what pass? I said, man, we giving you a pass. He said, what pass? I said, man, like I said, we giving you a pass. You know what I mean? So evidently, he was ready for it. He was waiting for that to happen. And he blew it out of proportion, actually. So basically, I don't know how he can take that as a threat.
When you say giving him a pass, what were you referring to? Like, why does Draymond need a pass in the city of Milwaukee?
Man, basically, you know, I was speaking up for the city of Milwaukee. Basically telling, like, man, we're giving you a pass. We haven't forgot about what you did. You know what I'm saying? Big bully. We haven't forgot about what you did, and we're giving you a pass. We forgive you. You know what I mean? But we haven't forgotten.